Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. I hope that with the music of Mr. Kevin MacLeod, you have put yourself in the cool breeze under your favorite tree on the island of Jamaica, just getting groovy and relaxing. So I want to welcome you this evening to the backyard. And I'm looking forward to having a wonderful labrish today. I hope you had a wonderful day. And I am quite excited, as I usually am, because we have some great discoveries about our past. Because, as you know, here in the backyard, we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And let me just thank all the listeners online that may be listening on your computer and those that have called in. I want to welcome you and ask you to just take your little virtual trip like we usually do. Get your favorite drink and settle in your favorite chair, because the backyard is where we come to relax each Thursday at 8 o'clock. And this evening, I have a new historian that I discovered, and I'm going to share a little bit about what they write about with you. But as you know, it's History Month, so we're digging up some history about people that you might not be very familiar with. And I just want to thank everybody for spreading the word on the shows we've been doing for the past couple of weeks, because they're certainly getting a lot of hits. I know the one we did on Mr. Jim Russell is just blazing a trail. And tonight we're celebrating two groups that I never knew existed. I think there was some mention of them in one of the documentation that I read. But if you're on my list, you will see that we are really celebrating the the Kingston Choral Union that was formed in 18-something. But what I want to do first is to tell you about this new person I've found who is a historian and has some history on Jamaica. He's Mr. Jeffrey Green, and he's a London historian. I don't think he's ever been to Jamaica, but he is researching history from the 1800s and before of just black people all over the world, whether they were in Zambia or Australia. He's doing a fantastic job. And if you're interested in history, in black history, you know, just Google Jeffrey Green, London historian, and you will get to his website. And he has a catalog of all the different things that he has written about already. So from his site, I first want to read you what he said, because most of what I'm going to do is from Dr. Lumsden, but in connecting the dots, I found this article from Mr. Green. And although I thought that this group was the first to visit London in a performance in 1906, he mentioned, and I read from his documentation, Britons were exposed to Jamaicans before. In 1906, the West Indian Regiment, a colonial regiment with troops from Jamaica. No, it wasn't 1906. I must have gotten the dates wrong. It was before that. It was 1886. The colonial regiment with troops mostly from Jamaica performed the whole entire summer of 1905. No, that was before 1906. What am I doing here? So in 1906, they performed at the colonial exhibition in South London's Crystal Palace. Now, I've never visited London, but for those of you who have, you possibly know where the Crystal Palace is. It says the Daily Gleaner of October 5th, 1905, reported that 966,324 people visited the show, and that the London Times of September 19th, 1905 pronounced the exhibition the best show ever since 1886. That's where the 1886 came in. So apparently they were having this exhibition in London since 1886. And the first performance of Jamaicans was actually in 1905. And that performance was by the West Indian Regiment Band, which we talked about last week, or, you know, since the month began. So that was very interesting, because it's just by researching and, you know, backing up Dr. Lumsden documentation that I was able to find that. So let me just read to you what he wrote about the group. The Kingston Choral Union of Jamaica renamed the Native Choir from Jamaica, left the island on 4th of January 1906 for Bristol, and then to Liverpool, where they were to appear at the Colonial Products Exhibition for entrepreneur Alfred Lewis Jones, led by T. Ellis Jackson, with pianist Harry Nation. The males were Lewis George Drysdale, Carlton Bryan, J.T. Lockie, L-O-C-K-I-E, that's spelled, J. Parker Ramsey. The women were Adeline McDermott, Marie Lawrence, Connie Coverly, and Evelyn Gordon. Three returned to Kingston in January 1907, just before the earthquake. An augmented group totaling 15 reached England on the 27th of February, 1907, where again they sang at the Colonial Products Exhibition in Liverpool on the 15th of, to the 19th of March. The above photographs, and he has beautiful photographs of this group on his website. And if you're watching online, you might be able to see some of it, because there's a flash going on there now, because I was able to download some of the pictures. I'm getting a little techie, folks. The old lady's on it. Let me get back to the article. And let me just tell the visitors who may come by later, you know, what we do here in the backyard is labrish. And when we're labrishing, we're very relaxed, you know, so we sometimes go off base, have sidebars, and as we sip our little drinks, and you're open, you're free to hit one on your telephone if you're calling in online to interact with me, because as I say, this is a lavish, so you can put in your 2 cents. But most of all, one of the reasons I'm calling these names is because you will see once I get to Dr. Lumsden's articles that she's trying to find out information about all these people who were so prominent and popular in London, going all over. They went to Wales. You'll hear about that later. but there's not a lot about them individually. She has documentation on a few, but she is actually hoping that some of the descendants of some of these people might have some information about, you know, what their whereabouts or their younger life, you know, when they got into it, into the group that toured. So I'll be reading the names with the hope that if not tonight, when people listen later on, or if someone listening knows someone with that name who they think may be related in some way, they can help Dr. Lumsden and Backyard Labrish fill in the gaps. So let me go back to the article. I think I mentioned Connie Coverley and Evelyn Gordon. Three returned to Kingston. Yes, I covered that. Now, and it talked about the above photographs. So take a look at the photograph if you can get online. Just Google Jeffrey Green, London historian. And if you just do Kingston Choral Union, you will get directly to his article. So he says here, during their 1906 tour, William Masters, born in Liverpool on June 1887, was the son of a sailor also named William Masters. He joined them and went to Jamaica and is in the 15th row above. I suppose he's pointing out where who that particular person is. A new female was Miss Welch, and a new male was named Barnes. Sometimes wearing picturesque costumes or native costumes, the choir moved into the entertainment circuit. In 1906, they had performed in Swansea, S-W-A-N-S-E-A, in late April, and for a week ending in August, in Worthing, where the Worthing Observer said they were well-educated and well-trained. They returned there in mid-September. They appeared in Whitby for 3 days and then went to Bridlington, Bridlington, yet another seaside resort, on August 25th to 28th. They were in Wrexham, North Wales, from the 1st of November to the 3rd, where Masters joined them. And at the end of that month, were in Innis, Cochlear, Ireland. Wow. The 5th of January, 1907, Jamaica Times reported their triumphs when Brian, Lockie, L-O-C-K-E, and Coverley returned. Mr. Brian scored heavily in Britain when he sang Down to the Double D Flat. The applause was tremendous. The following week, it announced that postcards of the choir and of Brian pulling a face were on sale in Kingston. So, in other words, folks, what this article is saying, that the group had a very successful tour and went all over the place, Ireland and Wales. I suppose, they're all adjoined, so I don't think they had to travel very far. But just flow with me here. If you look at the picture, you know, a lot of people, the now Jamaicans, some of them are talking about this black-white, black people couldn't do this in the old days. But I was really impressed that not only were they recruited to go, but they had such success that they were asked to come back and also toured all over. Now, here is, I'm still reading from Mr. Jeffrey Green's page. The 1906 group is dubbed 12 Colored Artists. That's what I suppose they were called, suggesting Stratton was not the only addition in that year's tour. The 1907 tour after Liverpool is little known apart from an undated visit to Plymouth, which was revealed in the Western Daily Mercury of August 1908, when they were back in that port city. Details of their song suggest American darky ballads or plantation ditties, but an advertisement in August said Jamaican street songs would also be presented. No details have been recovered. So Mr. Green, like Dr. Lumsden, is just trying to piece history together as he gets excerpts from different publications. But he's dealing strictly with what he finds in the English papers, I suppose. Now, in another article, he mentioned here, and what he does too is, you know, copy and paste from when he finds any documentation. Native choir from Jamaica, the Kingston Choral Union, renamed for a British tour, 1906. Sir Alfred Jones, that was the title of the article in the paper. Sir Alfred Jones, ship owner and merchant, employed the Kingston Choral Union to sing at the Colonial Products Exhibition in Liverpool in early 1906. Billed as the native choir from Jamaica, it numbered 6 males and 4 females, including the pianist Henry Nation, the bass and comic Carlton Bryan, the prima donna Adeline McDermott, the soprano Connie Coverley, and the conductor Ellis Jackson. The press reported that they had sung in good English and that the dusky singers, strangers from beyond the sea, had presented our national anthem. The singing was praised, and concerts had to be repeated. Theatrical entrepreneurs saw an opportunity, and the choir toured Britain. Native costumes were worn. Otherwise, formal wear dominated. Summer seaside entertainment included concert at Whitby and Bradington. And two spells in Worthing. The tour reached Ireland in December 1906. Members of the group returned to Jamaica, but most were back in Liverpool in March 1907. This time, the choir numbered 15, including William Masters. The Liverpool-born son of a Jamaican father recruited in Wexham. The tour continued until 1908 with appearances in Plymouth, Blackpool, closing in Liverpool in November. Their performances including Jamaican street songs. The tenor, Lewis Drysdale, settled in London where he taught singing until the 1930s. The soprano, Marie Lawrence, performed in London in the 1920s. So that is the report from Mr. Jeffrey Green's website that I found when I was researching Dr. Lumsden's website. So as, you know, Miss Louise Bennett would say, we're little but we tower. But, you know, way before the Coverleys, some of our Native Jamaicans were very well received as professionals in London. So let me just tell you now what Dr. Lumsden has been doing to try and put some more information together about this group. The first person I'll tell you about is Miss Adeline McDermott. Dermot, because she has a picture of her on our website and the following information. Adeline McDermott first became well known to her fellow Jamaicans in the early 1890s, when she was already being styled the prima donna of Kingston Choral Group. This all-black group had been started in 1882 by T. Ellis Jackson and had become a prominent feature of the classic and popular music, both local and foreign. As far as 1892 to 1893, Miss McDermott was being called Jamaica's Patty or Jamaica's Black Patty after the famous operatic soprano Adeline Patty and the well-known Black American soprano Senorita Jones, who had toured the West Indies in 1888. In 1895, the Kingston Choral Group won first prize in a choral competition held in Kingston. In writing of a concert given by the group after its victory, the Jamaica's Poets correspondent wrote of her, of the soloist, Miss A. McDermott was emphatically the most successful. Harrison Miller's writing in general, severely ill-treated by most amateurs, Miller's Waiting, which apparently is the name of a classical song, W-A-I-T-I-N-G in parenthesis, is generally severely ill-treated by most amateurs. But Miss Dermott's truly brilliant rendering of this delicate little song appealed to us most sincerely. Miss McDermott continued to be one of the leading lights of the Kingston Choral Union. In 1901, she sang at a concert in support of Henry Sylvester Williams and the Pan-African Association, and the Jamaican Times wrote of her performance, "The talent shown by Miss McDermott in acting and singing is of a marked character, something every Jamaican should be proud of. She acts and she sings as if her heart were in it." Naturally, when the Kingston Choral Union made their historic tour of Britain in 1906 and again in 1907-8, she was an important member of the choir. During these 3 years, the group, which came to be known as the famous Jamaican Choir, traveled the length and breadth of the British Isles, singing in theaters and concert halls in many major towns and cities. After the Jamaica Choir returned to Jamaica, Miss McDermott continued to feature in its programs. Though other younger singers, especially Miss Hannah Welch, were challenging her preempt position. In 1911, she married and was usually after that referred to as Madame McDermott Travers, T-A-V-E-R-E-S. Her singing career continued until 1920, but it seemed possible that she died in the latter years of that decade, since there is no reference to her in relation to the concert tour of the island made by another member of the choir, Joseph Packer Ramsey, who returned from abroad in 1930. So I am going to take a break here and find out if anyone on the board ever heard of these people before this, or these two groups. And the article I read was one that's put together by Dr. Lumsden from different places where she read this. And she's also asking if anyone has any information about any of these people that would be relevant to her completing the web, the information on the web about them. Please get in touch with her, and you can get to her just by Googling Dr. Joy Ramsey. I'm sorry, Dr. Joy Lumsden. You will get to her site, and you can send her an email. So at this point, I'm going to open up the board and ask if any of our listeners are familiar with any of these names or ever heard of these groups before. Do I have, and please hit one on your telephone if you would, that will indicate to me that you are available to speak. So let me, I see 631 is putting up a hand. So let me open up the mic. Give me a second here. Here we go. Good evening. You got Margaret in the backyard.
Hi, Margaret. Good evening. This is Janine from Long Island.
Welcome, Janine. How are you today?
Fine, thanks. And you?
I am great. I'm always excited when I'm getting learning new things about my native country.
Yes, I can hear that.
I'm like a kid.
Oh, I've never heard of those people, to be honest with you. This is new for me.
And it's been, and you were born and raised in Kingston, weren't you?
Yes, yes.
So was I. And I imagine, this is great things that this group did.
Yes,
so, you know,
sure
to know that we never knew anything about them.
Exactly.
And I am hoping that, you know, with me putting a voice to some of these historians' information, that more people will know about them. Because somehow, you know, I think I would have loved history a little better when I was learning in school if I was learning more about my native Jamaicans, don't you think?
Yeah, that's the trouble. We didn't learn Jamaican history.
Except for, you know, Admiral Penn and whoever, which I found quite boring.
Yeah.
But, I mean, a lot of things were going on in the regular Jamaican community that was quite newsworthy and historic, too. Because, you know, to actually put together a group and have it function effectively. And, you know, I remember, and I'm going to hopefully get some information on that eventually. And if anyone who comes by know any information about the Jamaica Symphony, I remember there was a Jamaican symphony active while I was young in Jamaica, because one of my girlfriends, I think her father knew the conductor. She cannot remember the name of the man, but it was called the Philharmonic Orchestra.
I think I heard of that.
Right. And I am hoping that we'll be able to put some information together about that. But do you know any one of those names that I called before of the people who actually toured? Because, you know, the press, the foreign press, gave them an identity, because, you know, they gave everybody's name.
Yes.
And not only this historian told you where each person was in the picture that he has. He has a picture of them in costume, you know, in native costume, and also one in formal wear, you know. And in those days, the ladies wore the long dresses.
Yes, yes.
Even when they were going out in the streets, because Dr. Lumsden has some pictures on her website about the actual after the earthquake of 2007, and even before, and, you know, when people went downtown, they had these long dresses down to covering up their shoes, their feet.
Yes,
you know, but can you imagine how hot and miserable those women were?
I guess so, but I guess they got accustomed to it, too.
Right. Oh, yes. you know, I'm just being funny, because it was the way people dressed all over the world, not
yes.
just there.
Yes, in those
here
days.
In the States and, you know, in the developing countries.
Yes, and
the only ones who were really dressing for the weather were the natives in Africa.
Yes.
Because it was too hot for any clothes, so they were going with as little as possible.
Possible, yes.
Yes, so let me now tell you about the gentleman who started the group, because they mentioned him and, of course, his the pianist who accompanied him in London and then, you know, mentioned everybody else.
Yes.
But even before that, you know, there was another group. Okay, let me read about T. Ellis Jackson is his name, and she has a picture of him, too.
Wow.
And if you're watching online, you know, there's a flash going on. One of those gentlemen that you will perhaps see flashing is him, his picture. And she says, practically nothing has so far come to hand about the personal life of Thomas Ellis Jackson. He was apparently born in Kingston and was a young man, probably 21, when the first reference to him appeared in 1882. And he was still alive in 1931.
Wow.
When Johnson Parker Ramsey made his concert tour in Jamaica. I don't know who Johnson Parker Ramsey is.
Yeah, before
apparently
my time.
He was big in his time in 1931.
Yeah.
Now, back to the article. By his own account, this he established the Kingston Choral Union in 1882 to provide tuition to its members so that they might study and practice the works of the great composers and to improve choral singing in the island. It started with a membership of 30 and from the start did good work, singing successfully at its first public concert in 1883, Handel's Hallelujah Chorus, Graceful Consort from Haydn's Creation, and other difficult pieces from the sacred classics. As with many such groups, after the first year or two, the enthusiasm of the members of the choir fell off. And to revive it, Mr. Jackson offered to give free tuition to 500 boys and girls between the ages of 10 and 16.
Wow.
He did not get the number he desired, but at that time, several members of the choir of the Scots Kirk, you remember that church?
Scottskirk.
Uh-huh.
No,
I think there was a Kirk Church downtown someplace. Anyway, back to the article.
Mm-hmm.
Where Jackson was chairperson at some period, joined the union. In 1896, the choral union was in a highly successful and flourishing condition and carried off the first prize in a competition open to all of the choirs in the island of Jamaica.
Wow.
In the early years of the new century, the Kingston Choral Union, under Jackson's leadership, retained its position as the island's premier choral group. In 1906, Sir Alfred Jones of the Elder Dempster line sponsored the group on a tour of Britain, which started with its appearance at the Colonial Products Exhibition in Liverpool in February. The tour was arranged by the managers of the exhibition, but Jackson led the group, planned the programs, and spoke of it on official occasions. The first tour was so successful that a further tour was undertaken in 1907 to 1908 in the aftermath of the terrible earthquake of Kingston of 1907. The choir received an enthusiastic reception all over Britain. They returned to Jamaica to great acclaim and appreciation of their promotion of Jamaica and the potential of its people. From this time, the group was always referred to as the Jamaican Choir and often as the famous Jamaican Choir. And I'm doing all this reading because, you know, as Mr. Green said on his website, that people now just, you think of Jamaica, foreigners,
right,
and it's one person as an entertainer, and that's Bob Marley.
Yes.
And, of course, he, because of the type of
music.
Right, not just that, but because of what we have now, the technology.
Yes.
You know, it is so much more powerful. But remember now, in the old days, like in 1906, I don't know if they had radio all over London. Perhaps they did. I don't know. If someone on the board knows, you can let me know.
1906,
yes. Perhaps, you know, it was mostly the newspaper that people would get information from.
Yes, yes.
So to know that they were ambassadors for what Jamaica can produce from as early as that, I think is something to be celebrated.
That's true.
And I am honored to have the opportunity to give these people some recognition.
Yes.
And I am hoping that the listeners on the board and those that are online will circulate, you know, this information. You can circulate. If you're on my list and you get an email about the program, you can just send that out to your friends and have them listen to this show. So they learn a lot about, you know, as I call them, the trailblazers of the past.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, just imagine, if during the 30s, I think it was the 30s or the 40s, when the Windrush left Jamaica with the whole lot of Jamaicans going to London, I forgot how long it took to make the trip. Can you just imagine what the travel by boat was like
then?
In 1905.
Yeah, that was a long trip. I guess a long trip.
Now, originally, it was all male of the Jamaica regiment, you know, the band that went. And remember, I mentioned last week that Mr. Jim Russell was involved with the Jamaica regiment because, you know, he was collecting toys for the soldiers who were there when the band dismantled. It was held at the theater that he managed in Spanish Town.
Yes,
there was this big to about it, right.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing was mentioned there. You see how important it is for history to be recorded accurately, really, because no mention was made in any of that documentation that this band had performed at the theater in London. I've never. Are you familiar with the name of that theater that I called in London?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm sure that the people, the Jamaicans living there, perhaps know this
I've
place.
I've never been there, so.
School.
Yeah.
Yes, and it seemed to, by the sound of it, sound like a fancy place.
Yes. I'm sure if you travel.
There even before this group.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were in the military at the time. But this is a group of men and women, and from what this documentation is saying, Mr., the person who started it, was quite young. And I'm sure that quite a few of his students were, too, T. Ellis Jackson.
Yeah.
It would be so neat if there are any of the Jackson descendants that know this that could fill in some of these blanks.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just really, really fascinated by all of this information that was hidden, buried. Definitely buried.
Yeah.
So let me
Well,
go
now
back.
It's alive.
yes. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Mr. Jackson, because it really touched a chord with me. After the return from British Isles, Jackson made the remarkable and courageous decision to establish his own theater to provide a venue for the choir and for other performers at a time when the city of Kingston was still trying to rebuild the municipal theater. His theater, which he called Convent Garden, Convent Garden, was situated at number 1 Sutton Street between James Street and Smith Lane. And opened officially in July of 1911. Here Jackson put on a variety of types of performance into the early 1920s, including films, local and foreign vaudeville and music hall turns, children's concerts and boxing, as well as more concerts of classical, popular, and local music.
Mm.
He also took similar performances to other locations around the island, as well as being the manager of the choir and the theater. Jackson was a competent performer as a singer and as a violinist. Although his career has been largely forgotten, he has a good claim to being Jamaica's first black impersonaro. Isn't that something?
Yes.
So this man, Mr. Jackson, Ellis Jackson, was not only an organizer, because he organized this group, wrote the programs, promoted it when he went. He was the one who talked about the what was going to be done at the concerts in all over the British Isles.
Ireland, yeah.
Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they referred to the group as being well spoken and well educated.
See what I mean?
And I think, if nothing more, that is what all Jamaicans should be grateful to Britain for.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe the way I rate it is that we were, during the colonial days, the people who were educated, although it was not available to everybody, they did not get second-hand education.
They were
educated at the same level that the people in the British Isles were.
Mm-hmm.
They're equals. And special, sessions were not, or special things were not put together for them because they were, in a third world country. It wasn't called third world then, but, a colonial state.
Yeah.
And it was of the caliber that I suppose some of the British writers were surprised.
Mm.
Especially since there were always in some ranks the feeling that people of color could not grasp as much. I did a show, I think it was about 2 years ago, about the first experiment that was done where a black Jamaican of total African descent, no mixed,
mm-hmm.
was sent to London by one of the, I don't know if he was a plantation owner, I can't remember, but I think I named it, I don't remember the name of it, but it's in the archives, because there was a movie about a switch in two different people, a black person and a white person here in the movie, and I make whatever the name was at the time, I used the same name.
Right.
But he was sent to be educated with this man's son.
Yes.
And not only did he excel, but, you know, he mastered different languages.
Right.
So it proved the point,
yes,
that, you know, internally we're all alike, regardless,
exactly,
of the color of
color,
the skin or the culture you were raised under.
Yes.
So there were apparently some people, some reporters, or they would not, you know, vocalize it as they did, that the group was well-educated and well-spoken.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember what one of our guests said last week when we were doing Louise Bennett.
Yes.
If you remember, our guest from Canada,
yes,
made a very good point.
She,
you know,
did.
That Louise and other people of that time, you know, we speak Patois because that's the native language, but you also could master the standard English so that you can communicate with anyone and they don't have to go look in a dictionary or their brain gets sort of frozen because they have to try to understand what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And in a debate or in a negotiation, you don't need the other party that you are debating or trying to negotiate with, trying to figure out what you're saying. So it's important for the now generation to have both.
Yeah, but Patois, we didn't really use that language. I don't remember using it.
Well, you would use
I
it.
I mean, when I'm playing or speaking with my friends.
Right, right,
but,
right.
But, you know, in general, I couldn't
right.
speak that way at home. I know I would be on the floor.
I know.
Well,
I'm
telling
the
honest truth.
There were a couple
they
of
would
other
knock
articles.
Me down.
Right. I read by Mr. Green, and he mentioned about, you know, this standard of education being really, really high. And I don't like to make comparisons, but, you know, I always say, you know, I just consider myself blessed to be born. I think I had the best of Jamaica and the best of the U.S. when I came here in the Kennedy years. So, but looking back, you know, I remember when I was in college, some of my American friends were, I wouldn't say not as astute, but I don't think that in certain areas they were as broad, you know, from the education they had wherever they came from, especially those from the South, as we were. We were exposed to a lot more, I think, in education because we were coming from the English edge.
Right.
So now there are other areas where we perhaps were not as astute, but when it comes to the language of English and comprehension and being able to articulate, it was totally a big difference. So I hope you enjoyed that little information about those two people.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to tell you about another one. He is Mr. George Davis Goode, G-O-O-D-E. And he was born in Port Royal in 1882.
Okay.
This is from Dr. Lumsden.
That's going
reader.
All the way back.
His father, who was a ship's captain and also kept a small grocery shop, made sure that his son and his daughter, Florence, received as good an education as possible. The children attended the government elementary school and then were taught by tutors
paid for by their father. They also received music lessons, at which George did so well that by the age of 15, he was the organist at St. Peter's Church. Later, as his ability as an organist became known, he was appointed organist at the Kingston Parish Church in 1906, and then at St. Michael's in 1910, where he served, listen to this, until 1960.
Wow.
From this time, he became a close friend of another bright young organist, Samuel Kitchen, K-I-T-C-H-E-N, of East Queen Street Baptist Church.
That's a big church.
In 1909, he married Hilda Dawkins, whom he had met when he was at the parish church, where she was a member of the choir. George Goode had also become a competent scientist. After gaining an unpaid job as an apprentice at the government laboratory at Hope in 1903, he quickly improved his qualifications. By 1905, he was second assistant chemist in science. In 1910, when the farm school was set up, he was appointed as a master there. From 1912, he worked on the clerical side of the Ministry of Agriculture, holding different posts of responsibility until his retirement in 1942. George Goode is, however, chiefly to be remembered for his contributions to music in Jamaica. In 1909, he and Samuel Kitchen started the Kingston Glee Singers, who delighted audiences with their unaccompanied singing until the early 1930s. In 1913, as organist at St. Michael's, he organized a festival in honor of the great Afro-British composer Samuel Coleridge Taylor, who had died in the previous year. The festival was a musical triumph, though it failed financially. Most memorable contribution was his involvement with the Diocese Festival Choir, which he conducted from its inception in 1925 until his retirement on grounds of his ill health in 1952. George Goode taught many pupils to play the organ and was involved in most musical activities of the period. He gave lectures on musical, scientific, and religious topics. In 1951, he was awarded the Gold Musgrave Medal in recognition of his outstanding contribution to music in Jamaica. Only one person had been awarded the gold medal before this, and that was Edna Manley in 1943. She died in December 1960, mourned alike by Jamaicans and those abroad who valued his dedicated service to the promotion and appreciation of music in his homeland. He died, you know, Mr. Goode died in December of 1960. But I never heard of him. Have you?
No. But these people are before my time.
Glee Club. So I am really sending out in the airwaves a message to anyone who may come by later to listen to this program, if you have been a student of Mr. Good, or your father or some relatives, or you know of someone who was a student or who interacted with the Glee Club or Mr. Good, who trained people, or Mr. Ellis Jackson, would you please, please, please get in touch with, just go to backyardlabrish.com and send me an email, or Google Dr. Joy Lumsden and send her an email and let us know what you know. Because I think this is a period that, you know, that there should be lots of people living that must have interacted with some of these people, because this man, Mr. Good, died in 1960,
yes,
which is just before independence.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, as I say, Dr. Lumsden is really doing her best to put some little-known Jamaicans on the map, because in so many ways they have contributed to the culture and to the development and helped to bring the island to where it is now. Mm-hmm. The unfortunate thing is that during their days, we did not have access to the techie things that we have now that can make, you know, go viral so quickly. So I really hope that some of the younger generation will come by, and if anyone listening online or on the board know of anyone who might have those names and might have some information that we can verify and share, boy, you would really make both Dr. Lumsden and I very happy.
Mm.
Because I think these people really need to be recognized.
Yes, that's true.
You know, because, you know, there are so many people who, in their own way, even in the days when things were very difficult, both communication and travel and, you know, getting your idea or your passion, perfect, you know, living your passion or executing what you want to do, what your desires are, it wasn't easy.
No.
I know that the young folks nowadays might think that things are difficult and they don't have opportunities. But when you look back at what some of these people had to work with.
With, yes. Mm-hmm.
During the time that they did what they did.
Yes.
It's really very, very inspiring.
Yes.
And I am hoping that the lesson will get through to some of the younger generation, you know, that we really have a lot to be proud of.
Amen.
And they need to continue to build on what the forefathers did, you know, even though it might not be easy, but it's quite doable if they could do it during those times. Can you imagine even getting people together, you know, to collect a group when, you know, I mean, telephone. I was watching a show, I think it was The Chew or something, some recent show, and there were some people on there said that they cannot live without their phone. They have to have their phone all the time.
Hmm.
It's impossible that they don't ever think that they could live without the phone. And I just want to share this with some of the listeners. You know, I did a little talk at my grandson's school. He's only in third grade. So the kids are between, I suppose, 7 and 8. He's 8. And when I told the kids that I didn't, you know, at first when I was young, we didn't have phones. And then when we got phones, it was party line and other people were on the line. You should see their eyes. and some of them in writing me say, I cannot believe that you said you had no phone. I mean, it's a big thing to them. It was so funny to see the little notes. I mean, they just can't believe it. So back to what I was saying.
it wasn't all that easy to put a group together.
Yeah.
You know, but I suppose, you know, they, people would go to people's houses and it would be more people in the neighborhood, I think. Or we had
a
good
church,
public transportation.
Yeah.
And all of, and church, as you say, there were groups in churches. But there were remarkable things that were done by average Jamaicans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very average people who were not, you know, special in any way. Of course, we're all special. But their lifestyle, and yet they pursued their dream,
mm-hmm.
and got the job done.
Exactly.
Because this Mr. Ellis sure did, and so did Mr. Good. And talk about multitasking. You know, he was a scientist. He started off even when he was quite young.
Oh.
So I just think it's remarkable. And I'm really, really hoping that, you know, more people we have to know about our past. It's good to know about our past and to have so many things that we can celebrate and be proud of.
Right.
I think should help strengthen the next generation to pursuing things that are good.
Yes, hopefully.
And I am hoping, this is my hope, and I hope that my fans will support me, that we will have more positive things about our past circulated between us instead of some of the things that are not so positive that are being circulated now, you know, because there are a lot of people behaving badly and bad news. And the more energy we give to things like that is the more it grows. So now that we have discovered all of this neat things about some of these Jamaicans, who I'm sure some of their descendants are scattered all over the globe, and I'm hoping that if they didn't know, they will try to find out more. And if they do know some things that we have not discussed on the air, they will share it with the rest of the world. So I want to really celebrate and thank Dr. Lumsden for the work that she's doing.
Yeah.
And I do want to mention Dr. Rebecca Tortella, too, because I use her material quite often. And now I want to thank Mr. Green for his contribution to our show this evening. But I really got really excited, and do go by on the website. If you go on the Blog Talk website, you will see a little flash going, too, if you look at or listen to the show on the Blog Talk Radio's website. You will see the pictures of some of the people that we discussed this evening. And, you know, when you can put a face with a name, there's more emotion to it. And as I looked at the group of these wonderful Jamaicans, you know, and I think of the obstacles that some of them might have had to overcome. There's no details as to whether this merchant man who took them there, you know, or invited them there, paid their passage or what. There's no details. We have no details. Where they stayed, you know, nothing, absolutely nothing, besides what I read to you. So there's a lot missing, but they triumphed. That is the important thing.
Yes, exactly.
They triumphed. They were well received. And so, you know, Jamaicans have been touring and being ambassadors for our country for a long time. So I hope that the foreigners living abroad will really take that to heart and be proud. So when they see some of the misbehavior, perhaps they can, you know, just rest assured that we have been well looked, we have been looked at very well from long ago. So, Miss Janine,
yes,
I want to thank you for being verbal with me this evening. I see we have a couple
welcome.
Of other people on the board, but nobody's putting up their hand. And we have finished our hour. It goes
already.
By quickly sometimes.
Yes.
But I do hope that the listeners have enjoyed this information, and it's a work in progress. So I'm hoping that we will get some feedback and perhaps some people who might know somebody who knows some of these people. So, Ms. Janine, do you have any parting words for our listeners?
No, not really. Just that, you know, as usual, it's very interesting and it's really good to hear these things because, you know, we really didn't know about it. And we had so many famous people even before our time, and it, you know, it was like under the carpet, as the saying goes. Now it's coming out, so that's good.
Right. Okay, well, I want to ask our listeners, I want to thank everyone for being here with me this evening, and I want to ask you to continue to spread the word. You know, even if you're not very techy, you can copy and paste if you're on my list, and I send you the promo about the upcoming show. You can just forward that to your list so that everybody will know. If they're not here with me on a Thursday night, they can still listen to the show after we've closed. You know, Ms. Janine, the show we did last week have, you know, almost 90 hits already.
Wow.
So people are coming by to listen to the show afterwards.
Yeah.
So I encourage you to send it to the people on your list, and they, you can tell them that lots of shows are in the archives, and if they would like to be on Backyard Labrys list, and I only use that list to announce what we'll be doing the upcoming week, you can go to www.backyardlabrys.com and just on the Contact Us page, just send me a little note that you would like to be added to our mailing list, and we'll be happy to do so. So with that said, I want to thank you for being here. I hope you have enjoyed the balmy breezes as they blew across your face, because you're now on a virtual trip to Jamaica. Every time you come to the backyard, that's what we do.
Yeah.
They're doing virtual everything now, so we can travel just like that.
That, yeah, exactly.
Okay. So with that said, Ms. Janine, and everybody, does anyone else on the board want to give a shout-out? I guess not. So with that said, I am going to bid you good night. Thank you for being here. And as usual, we'll hopefully have something very interesting next week, because we're here in the backyard each Thursday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica,
land we love.
Thank
Amen.
You for being here, and I hope to see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Night.